Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, generous friends. Welcome to Heart-Centered Giving, where we believe that the most impactful philanthropy comes from your heart, from your deepest values. I'm Catherine Pike in Larkspur, California. Today, I'm so pleased to welcome back Deborah Quilter. Deborah is a highly respected yoga teacher who lives and practices in New York. Today she will talk to us about how philanthropy can be a spiritual practice using the principles of yoga. Welcome, Deborah.
Welcome, Catherine. I'm so pleased to be with you again.
Deborah, last time we talked about, or actually you taught us about Seva Yoga, and you and I recently had a conversation about Karma Yoga. Can you tell us about Karma Yoga?
Yes. A lot of people put Seva and Karma Yoga together. There's the lumpers and the splitters. And some people say Seva is Karma Yoga and it's sort of vice versa, and other people don't. And in a way, it sort of doesn't matter. I mean, if you want to be really precise, I suppose it does. But basically, Seva is selfless service. And Karma Yoga has more to do with your work. And by work, I mean things like running a company or going to your job every day. But it could also be something as simple as doing the dishes or scrubbing the floor or talking to a friend. It's basically whatever you are doing, whatever action you are doing, could have elements of Karma Yoga because of the way that you do it. Karma means action. Karma Yoga is the yoga of action, and it's very highly regarded as a spiritual practice. When I was in India at an ashram, we did Karma Yoga every day, and it could be washing the floors, it could be setting up the altar for the practice, it could be things that I really thought were probably make work. You know, like they would take us all out to this courtyard, spill a bunch of candles in these pottery, they were like votive candles in a little clay pot, and we were supposed to see which ones could still be used and which ones couldn't and separate them into piles. And we, you know, were sitting in the hot sun sorting through these candles, and your hands were getting all grimy and it's hot and everyone's sweating. And you know, it's a very interesting thing to do because it makes you look at your reaction, and you can see yourself getting irritated because of the sun and the griminess of your hands. And it's actually, I'm sure that they did this so that we would have the opportunity to watch our minds and how we were responding to this work. Because you could also look at it at, oh, here I am, sorting these candles, doing this purification for my soul.
Oh,
it's a good practice.
How fascinating. Well, I can certainly understand these things. I don't especially understand lumpers and splitters, did you say?
Splitters
but
and
I
lumpers?
Understand. Yeah, I understand washing floors and tasks, and I could understand how frustrating it could be to think that you came to the ashram to learn, and of course you're going to do some work, but you didn't expect to be washing floors or cleaning toilets, but we are learning in this way, aren't we?
Well, we are, yes, and the idea is that it doesn't matter whether you're giving a lecture, you know, on some esoteric topic, or you are the one who's assigned to clean the latrine, you give of yourself with your full heart to that work. Mm-hmm. And so it really makes you think. It makes you think a lot. It's a great spiritual practice. And it's not as far a stretch. I know we've been talking about this for some time. It's not as far a stretch as you might think when you apply it to philanthropy. Because,
really?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this, and mm-hmm. you were the one who actually inspired this whole topic.
Mm. Thank you. Well, I do understand the importance of working without attachment to results, and that seems to be important to both Seva and Karma. Karma Yoga, right. There is a distinction, I know. But one of the things that concerns me about the philanthropy that we hear about every day is the issue of control. Control is a huge problem in philanthropy because of the power imbalance between the giver, the person with the money, and the receiver, the one who needs the funds. As philanthropists, we really have to realize that we are not the prime mover of the project. We are simply the funder. We are providing fuel to what usually started out as someone else's dream, a dream that resonates with us for sure, because otherwise we wouldn't want to support it. But what we lose sight of, because of the power imbalance that money creates, is the reality that the project is always, if effective, highly collaborative. The project itself, the dream of a vision shared that we can help bring to life with our funds or our service, is a gift to us. By helping make this dream real, our own reputation will shine, and we will be allowed to bathe in its glory. But this sounds to me about ego again being satisfied. What would yoga have to say about this?
Well, you're bringing up a couple of things, actually. The idea of control and the attachment would have to do with grasping, sort of grasping at some sort of end result. And also, it's so complex because in a way, when you're doing karma yoga, you're not attached to the result. So in other words, you're kind of like giving and then disappearing. I know this isn't practical for philanthropists, but it's not about you. And in a way, it's not even about them. It's about doing the right thing and the good work for its own sake.
And what a concept in philanthropy. My goodness, it's so important.
Yeah. I think you really need to examine your own thought process very honestly. Mm-hmm. And think about, you know, if you are trying to control something, why would you do that? I mean, maybe you could give me an example so that I can understand. How does that actually happen, that people would want to control? Can you give me some sort of example of this?
Of how people would want to control? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the classic example is having your name on a building. And here in San Francisco, we have some very, very generous philanthropists, incredible philanthropists, like we have Mark Zuckerberg and Dr. Priscilla Chan. They have totally transformed SF General Hospital. We have Mark Benioff and his wife Laura, and Benioff Children's Hospital is named after them. And just yesterday, Sandy Weill and his wife Joan announced that they would give $185 million, the largest gift ever received in San Francisco, to UCSF to start a neurosciences institute. So, I mean, we have incredible gifts. Now, the question of control is interesting because, I mean, yesterday Sandy Weill mentioned that he and his wife wanted to be part of the conversation. That doesn't mean they want to control anything, but they want to be part of the conversation, and it is a two-way conversation. So we are very, very fortunate to have very inspiring and very generous philanthropists here in the Bay Area. But to me, one of the major lessons that we can bring to our philanthropy from yoga is to surrender to what really is a shared vision. The vision is always going to be collaborative if it's going to be effective, and it's going to take on a life of its own. You might have your name on a project, but that doesn't mean that you're going to have any control over what it becomes. We can and we should have a general idea of where we want it to go, but we really can't control the process or the outcome.
It makes me wonder, something, and maybe you can answer this question for me. I know in my own specialty, which is repetitive strain injury, no one really wants to fund research for that because it's not a shiny thing like neuroscience. It's not a cure for cancer. People get very sick. They need a lot of help, but they very often don't get better, so it's sort of a chronic thing. And, you know, it happens to poor people, injured people. It's not something spectacular. And as a result, it's not something that people are very interested in funding. They'd be much better, probably more interested in finding a cure for cancer, something that's shiny and would get a lot of media attention. And it makes me wonder if that might be a question that people could ask themselves about philanthropy. You know, why am I doing this? Is it because I want to be the person who funded the research that found a cure for Lou Gehrig's disease, or it's something that would really make headlines? Or do I see a need that's desperately underfunded, and I want to help in that area, and maybe no one's even going to notice? And it seems to me that if you saw something like that, if you saw a need and tried to do something about that, even if it wasn't going to get you anything, and you were doing it just because it needed to be done, and you know, maybe there is no cure, but these people still need help. So you're gonna fund something like that. To me, that would be sort of a beautiful example of karma yoga. And you know, I told you about my friend Paul.
And
I bring him up because he's kind of the perfect karma yogi, and they say that there's mysterious gifts, and you really don't discover these mysteries until you start actually doing karma yoga. And then your life starts to change in ways that you couldn't have predicted. And that's what I love about yoga. It's very mysterious. It sort of has a life of its own, and you just watch and wonder as these wonderful things come into your life that you're not expecting just because you're doing this wonderful spiritual practice. But getting back to Paul, my friend Paul started a small charity that I'm involved with, and he started it because he was approached by this low-caste person in a small village in Khajuraho, India. And this fellow asked him if he would put his two or three children through school. And Paul was there visiting as a tourist, and he said, well, why would I do that? And Baba said, well, because we have karma from a past life, and you're going to do this. And Paul said, well, I don't think so. And Baba said, well, yes, you will. And as it turned out, he started this charity, and now there's, I think, 19 children and several families in three cities. And the karma yoga part comes because Paul flies on his own dime over to India two or three times a year. He stands in the hot sun outside in the window paying for each child's tuition. He goes and talks to the teachers. He looks at their report cards, sees how they're doing. He talks to the family about how important it is that the kids go to school every day. This is not easy work. It's
I'm sure not.
Grunt work. I mean, you're standing there in the sun. You've got to take a tuk-tuk to get to the ATM. The ATM doesn't work. You have to go to another one. I know this firsthand because I was there helping him a couple of years ago. You know, you're standing in line waiting for the tailor to take measurements for the school uniforms. You're interviewing tutors. You're going into these people's homes in slums in Delhi and other places. So, but he's doing this beautiful work, and he just never seems to get tired. And one of the things that I've noticed personally about karma yogis is that they don't get tired. They have enormous energy, and they just keep working. And Paul has never, ever, he doesn't really want to be noticed, particularly. He says this is a group effort. He just does the work and then moves on. And
wonderful.
He is a Catholic. You know, he's not Hindu or a yogi or anything else, but it's sort of a perfect example. And just one more little example. When I was at the ashram, there was a guy there, great big guy, and he was really the perfect karma yogi. We were doing these practices, and he would be the one serving us the salt water for something or another, or serving the food or cooking. He did more work than anyone, and it's considered a great purifier. It helps you purify your mind so that you can see things clearly.
Wow. Well, Paul really sounds like the selfless philanthropist, and I guess you would call him a karmic yogi, would you?
A karma yogi, yeah, because karma he yogi. Does the work. He gets his hands dirty. He's doing, it's action. I mean, you could write a check, and boy, do we need people to fund everything. I mean, we have fundraisers once a year. But there's also the philanthropy that you actually introduced me to. You know, the philanthropy of action.
Yes.
You know, doing something for somebody else. It's not necessarily writing a check. It's sitting with someone.
Right. It's volunteer work. It's advocacy.
Yeah.
Yes. That can be extremely important.
Yeah. It could be, you know, having a heart-to-heart conversation with somebody who's down. It could be encouraging someone to live their dream. There's so many ways that philanthropy could be applied. It could be inspiring someone else to action.
Yes.
And I think
inspiring
that,
someone else to action, what an intriguing idea. Because, you know, when you were talking a few minutes ago about no one wants to fund RSI, usually it is true that what is funded needs to be the donor's idea and needs to resonate with them. It needs to come from their own passion. So how do you inspire someone to an idea that you see as important? Because you need to make them see that it's important. And I'm intrigued that Paul took this on when he didn't seem to have any connection to it. So somehow he was inspired to philanthropy. And how do you think that happens?
Well, Paul is by nature very generous, and this isn't the first charity that he's begun. He and his partner are very generous people, and they're constantly helping others.
Great.
As part of their own Christian ethic.
Yes.
But the group that he started is really about helping these families, getting the children into school and helping them with their health care, because poverty and poor health go together hand in hand. I mean, it's just endless. And the need is so great. It's just, you know, we go over there and it's overwhelming because you see so much poverty and you think, oh, I'm doing so little. But it still needs to be done. And it's still, you know, 19 kids who might have an education and have a shot at a better life and get them out of their class system.
Yeah.
You know, it's 19 children. And so we're doing something.
You certainly are. I'm curious because you did bring up that Paul is also Catholic. And is there anything you could tell us about Catholicism and yoga? Obviously, the two seem compatible.
Well, yoga is not a religion, and it goes really well with Christianity and Islam. And I mean, because I think it's one of those situations where when you rise to the top, the great minds meet. Everybody seems to think that helping others is a good idea.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to agree that not harming others is a good idea.
Yeah.
And if you look at practically any religion or spiritual practice, the same kind of values apply. They just do things a little bit differently. And that's one of the reasons why I love yoga so much, because in my own student body, I have Jewish people, agnostics, atheists, Christians, people who practice Buddhism. I mean, everything. So it's wonderful that way, because it's not dogmatic. You can always practice these wonderful precepts without interfering with someone else's religious beliefs.
Oh, how wonderful. Yes, so in a way, you could say that yoga is really a unifier, couldn't you? I mean,
oh, yes.
It helps us. Yes.
And the Hindus, when I was at the ashram, there was what they call the Christ Kathur. And the Kathur is like a little tiny baby temple. You go in, and there were pictures of Christ and the Blessed Virgin Mary all over the place. And some of the saints, too, I think, if I remember properly. So they are very open to Buddha and all the saints. And I love that about that religion, that it's so welcoming of other beliefs and traditions.
Yeah.
Hinduism is not yoga. I mean, there's overlap, but yoga is not a religion. Sorry. Go ahead.
No. Well, I'm so intrigued by everything you're telling us today, and especially so the idea that philanthropy can be a spiritual practice. Would you like to elaborate on that? We don't have a lot of time left, but it would be a beautiful closing idea, I think.
Yes. Well, anything you do can be a spiritual practice.
Mm.
Anything, any work, it's how you handle it. If you think of philanthropy as, I am an instrument of goodness. And
like St. Francis.
Sorry?
I am an instrument of your peace. Let me be an instrument of your peace. That's what St. Francis said.
The St. Francis prayer. I am an instrument of good, and, you know, just thinking of all that you do bringing blessings and thinking things through so that what you're doing isn't interfering with the process. You're not denying someone's self-empowerment by taking over the project for them. You're allowing the people to do things for themselves and become empowered themselves. That you're doing it for the right reason. You're not attached to the result. You're not attached to having a building or an event named after you particularly. You're just doing it for its own sake and moving on. You're not holding on to that. And you're doing everything.
What a beautiful perspective.
Yeah, for the right reasons. It is beautiful, Catherine. I am so inspired by what I see.
Mm.
And I'm so inspired. And you don't need to be rich to do this. You taught me that. Because you were calling me a philanthropist for sharing some books with someone I worked with.
Oh, absolutely.
Years ago.
You've been a philanthropist your entire life.
Yes.
Without even knowing it.
Yeah, well, thanks to you, I've begun to open my mind to see what philanthropy really is.
Yes, it's second nature to a giving, generous person like yourself.
Well, I think, you know, we don't see actions as philanthropy. And perhaps you should talk more about that in a future episode, is all the various ways that people can be philanthropic without writing a check, you know, what they can do, how they can be. It's more of a state of mind.
Yes. Oh, I love that idea.
A beautiful state of mind. You know, Lakshmi is a Hindu goddess, and she's the goddess of abundance. And she's pictured with, I think she usually has four arms. And she's pictured with gold coins spilling out of one of her palms. And you pray to Lakshmi for abundance. So in a way, I suppose she's the, not patron saint, but the goddess of philanthropists. But it's sort of endless, and, compassion, I think, could be a form of philanthropy, compassionate listening.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And you know, going back to karma yoga, that's how the karma yoga is great, because you burn off what they call your samskaras, which are thoughts, you know, they're conditioned reflexes. It could be something like your ego. It could help you burn away the ego involvement that you might have to your philanthropic interests.
Oh, Deborah, you are such a jewel. And what I especially love about what you've taught us today about yoga is that we can use these teachings to grow in our awareness of ourselves and how we treat each other and of how we connect with others and how we can grow through philanthropy and community service. Yoga is a gift, and Deborah, you are such a gift to teach us all that we can to be our best selves in our philanthropy. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about my favorite thing, Catherine. I really
appreciate it. Oh, absolutely. We will certainly have you back as soon as we can. And for all of you, thank you for joining us. And if you have questions about any of these topics or would like to see a certain topic covered on the show, please email me. And if you need personal guidance about organizations to donate to or how to manage your own giving, please do contact me. Until next time, this is Catherine Pike signing off. Thank you so much.